Na 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 na. Hey, gotta love that podcast show. Na 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 na. Hey, yeah, I love that podcast show. Oh, BS and beer is the place to go to get all the Saints news. Hell yeah, podcast show. Na 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 na. Hey, gotta love that podcast show. Na na.
Now, recording live, it's the BS and Beer Podcast crew with your host, David Romero.
Welcome in another week, another edition. It's the BS and Beer Podcast crew recording live, wall-to-wall New Orleans Saints football talk from our studios at Meat House. With me today, Heath Elsenson, Craig Wright, Wesley Coleman, and the New Orleans Saints. It's getting harder and harder to explain this. So grab a drink, sit back and relax, because for the next hour or so, we're going to be doing New Orleans Saints football, BS and beer style. Gentlemen, what is it? 27-17, and in a game that at some points it felt kind of close, because in the first half, I think the defense played well. As the game progressed, it is now my thought, my feeling, and it's always trying to figure out how. It's not why things are going the wrong way with me. It's, you know, how are other things affecting, like, because now the defense doesn't look as good as it did or we thought it was. And you just have to start feeling that you just can't keep, not only emotionally, mentally, but when you start turning the ball over, when you can't convert first downs, now all of a sudden the defense is on the field for a longer period of time. They wear down. And again, emotionally, when you know that you just really have no chance, the Saints would have had to have scored a couple of defensive touchdowns just to keep them in the game.
Hey, folks. All right, listen. I'm so not in the mood for you guys. You're blabbering on and on, okay? And it's enough, all right? It's enough. Blah, 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 blah. Okay, today's Monday, all right? So stop doing your stupid radio thing. And if you want to pick up where you left off tomorrow, at least it'll be Tuesday, all right? So just keep it down. Actually, don't keep it anything. Just stop, okay? Just stop doing what you're doing.
Heath, welcome in, man. And another, I can't even say it disappointing. It was, I expected it, you know? So the Saints go Thursday night. The thing that's getting embarrassing is we keep playing these nationally televised games with a beat-up team and coming out looking awful. Give me your general thoughts.
Oh, like you said, I mean, not really that surprising. The Saints are just, they're too injured of a team right now. They're playing with too many missing pieces. And, you know, I mean, we could critique individual performances all we want. And, you know, and certainly there were some mistakes made. But like you alluded to, you know, the defense doesn't look as good. Well, that's partially on the fact that they're on the field for so many minutes of the game. And then they're trying to strip balls and do things, you know, and they miss a tackle because they were going for a strip because they're trying to make something happen because the offense can't. And, you know, we're in that whole thing right now. And then guys start pressing and, you know, they throw an interception because they're trying to make something happen, anything happen. And they just, you know, we're playing with not with a full deck right now. I mean, I don't really know what else to say about it at this point. It's we're beyond next man up, you know, that works for a couple of hurt guys, you know, when you got half the damn team hurt or whatever, you know, no team is that deep in a salary cap era and all. I mean, there's just no way.
I mentioned it, you know, the whole next man up thing, and there is some validity to it. There is going to be injuries in football when you're like, let's say, you know, Terron Armstead. Listen, it's very reasonable to think that he could go out injured because he has a history of it. So Landon Young comes in. Well, actually, Hurst would have come in first, but you bring in a backup. You can't just make excuses. We didn't have Armstead because that's part of the game. But we're just now to the point where it's ridiculous. Wesley, Heath kind of alluded to it, but I now look at the defense. We were talking about how many big chunk plays that we've given up. How much of that has to do with just the defense is now saying, listen, we got to make plays. We got to step up. And then all of a sudden it's like you can't play conservative anymore. You can't make them earn it. You have to stop them, which means that you play more aggressive, balls get over to the top.
Yeah, I mean, the pressure is definitely on the defense to, I mean, if it gets to a point of actually like not necessarily even turnovers, but maybe even scoring at this point. I think we've seen it this year with Deontay Harris on special teams, returning balls out of the end zone that he shouldn't be bringing out of the end zone. We talked about that in Tennessee, that kind of was a thing of he was bringing the ball out every single time until he got hurt and fumbled. There's got to be pressure on him because there's not people who should be starting the NFL playing on our offensive line. And then you make it even worse that Taysom starts this game and then has a clear finger injury in the game, which whether anybody knew how bad the injury was at the time or not, it definitely puts pressure on the rest of the team to go like, what do we do here? Like there has to be something special happen and something out of the box.
All right, Craig, I'm going to read this to you and you can give us your thoughts on it. And then I also want to get the thoughts on from the other guys here. There's an ESPN article and it has the kind of the team injury index. The best team in the league is Kansas City. They're 8-4 and their health rating is an 8. And I think the scale is from 1 to 10. Players on IR, 8. Starts missed because of injury, 38. Now let's scroll and we'll scroll some more. Keep scrolling. Excuse me while I scroll a little bit more. And we'll scroll, and my thumb's starting to get a little tired, but here we are. The second, there's like three teams beneath us, but the New Orleans Saints with a health rating score of 2. I think I mentioned it and I said 3, but it's actually a 2. 22 players on IR, 78 starts missing. Now, one of the things that it doesn't really, just those numbers in general don't really mention is the impact players. Like it's different to have your starting, strong safety out or such, or maybe one of your wide receivers if you deep, but when your starting quarterback goes out, change things a little bit different. What's your perspective on this?
I'm amazed that there's any teams that have had more injuries than us, but you kind of said it yourself. It's the guys that are hurt, it's our number one receiver. It's the number one running back. It's the number one quarterback. It's not a bunch of, UDFAs that just made the roster and are kind of getting, okay, we're going to IR them. It's kind of like a red shirt year kind of thing. We don't have any of that. They're all impact players. I mean, we've got a combined 3 first round picks that are injured on just defensive end right now. I mean, it's one of those things. I don't know of any idea how you're supposed to win with the kind of luck and injuries that the Saints have gotten lately. It's just the guys on the field are doing what they can do. Taysom Hill is doing his Taysom Hill thing. Whether or not you think that's a good thing or a bad thing is kind of a personal preference, but it's what we have left. We're losing by attrition now. I think we've said this on the show before. I think Wes brought it up. I think that the starters of the Saints are among the best starting lineups in the NFL, but we don't have that. And we haven't all season. And it's right. Infuriating that you look at the roster and you go, oh, we should win some freaking games with this line. Look at this. And instead, we're on a 5-game skid because everybody is in the MASH unit.
Okay. It's also it's interesting to have the 2020 perspective of how we've lost these games. I mean, there's a couple games we would have won just if Will Lutz was healthy. Even with all the other crap, even with all the other people missing. I think there's a point to be made of, I mean, this team would have a pretty damn good record and be in the middle of the playoff hunt if just Jameis and Lutz weren't. I mean, that's with all the terrible wide receivers and tight ends, right, and Kamara out and all the weird in the offensive line and all. I think that just those two makes this a pretty legitimate team, and I mean, makes the win-loss record completely.
Well, to add to that, Wesley, I think there are two games, the Giants game and the Tennessee game.
Yep.
There's a very good argument that if you just simply have a kicker, one is with Winston, one was without, that we're 7-5 right now. Now, we're still on a 4 out of 5 games skid, but the fact of the matter, it's amazing how you go from 5-7 to 7-5 just by having a healthy kicker. Let me give you a little bit more of the guys who are more injured than us, and I'm not sure how well the Giants are 2 also. We have 22 players on IR. They have 23, but we have 78 games missed by starters. They have 68. Let's take a little bit lower look at the teams with 1. Amazing 9-3 Green Bay Packers. They have, well, golly, how are they coming up with these things? How are these guys ones when Green Bay has 9 players on IR and 64 Dame's missed. I mean, even on this, they're trying to give him the sympathy points or what? We have 14 more games missed. I'm sorry, four more games missed. That's the Giants. 14 more games missed and nine. I mean, it's ridiculous why they even have them as a one. But anyway, so that's a bad example. I'm not sure about why.
No, and then stat the Ravens nerd's got a stat nerd, man. They got to find some weird stat.
But Baltimore has 81 games missed and 22 players on IR. And that is pretty impressive. Wesley, give me some more thoughts here. The injuries, obviously they're hurting the Saints, but can you make an excuse for them? Baltimore's 8-4.
Yeah. I think with what we've watched, and again, Heath alluded to it in the salary cap era, this was the wrong season to have the most injuries. We just cut $100 million in payroll. Some of those people are starters. We got really lucky, getting rid of Jackrabbit, but the way that Paul Sonodebo has played, nobody saw Paul Sonodebo being good this year. After taking a year off his last year in college, it was going to take him some time. I thought he was a future good player. But, I mean, cutting people like that, losing Emmanuel Sanders, like all the way that we couldn't have some starters, and then definitely there's no depth on this team that we could have. This was the worst year for us to deal with any kind of injuries. But now we're talking about, like, I don't even know how to put that in perspective because it's everybody's injured. Did you really say there was 20 something people on IR for us?
Yes.
22 people.
Yes.
22 people on IR. I mean, if you count the long snapper and the punter and the field goal kicker, there's 25 starters on your team.
Right.
That's insane that you're talking about that many people being on IR. I don't know if there's an excuse. I think that, people that are getting overly frustrated with that we continue to lose games, you got to have some correct perspective. We should not win.
Wesley, I think the fact
that they've been close with what we're doing is a good job by some people.
I think when you made the best point when I said, is there an excuse? And you put things in perspective. So I think you made a good point there. It's not really the same. Heath, let's talk about this. One of the most insane penalties that I've ever seen. And I mentioned it in production. Yeah. In 42 years of watching professional football, then I realized, well, these kind of rules weren't even in the game back then.
Yeah.
But there's a blindside. They call it a blindside hit. This is a hit that was designed to prevent guys from peeling back on punt returns and just knocking their block off from the side when they aren't looking. So a blitzing safety comes in, and was it Garrett that steps up and blocks him?
Griffin, yeah.
Garrett Griffin steps up and blocks him. And now he did come from across the formation, but that's any running back. Now he's not a running back, but the point is that when a guy comes off the edge, your running back oftentimes has to find the guy and block him before he gets to your quarterback. They call him for a blindside hit. Have you seen something? Well, you're talking about a New Orleans Saints team. So that's, I don't know how to pose the question. Go ahead and start talking. Because I've seen it. I've seen worse things happen to the Saints.
Yeah,
but that was bad.
It's horrible. I mean, you know, I bring this up constantly. I have been beyond frustrated with the officiating in the NFL really for years now. I don't understand how a league full of multi-billion dollar a piece teams can't do better than what they're doing at officiating. And it's especially bad. I always find the ones that are really horrible when they're in the wide open, right? You literally have an official that does nothing but stand there and watch what happens to the quarterback. Okay. And it's in the wide open, you know, it's not like this is an interior line play. Was the guy holding? Did he, you know, you're in the wide open by the quarterback, where everybody's eyes are. I don't know how you make that call. I don't care if he peeled, but I don't care what he did. He hit him side to side. I mean, they were face to face. I mean, I don't know, dude. I'm speechless. I don't know what to say. And then I don't know why they can't have gotten it together and gotten it right. You know what I mean? I can't remember if they huddled up about it. That would make it even worse if they did. And they still came out with the wrong call.
Right.
Well, but
and, Go ahead. Also, Heath, just to put it all in perspective, the game is 13-10 at the time. The Saints force a punt, from the Cowboys. Yeah. We kick a field goal. We are down by three. We force a punt. Defense looks good. We get an 11-yard gain. So it looks like maybe we're going to have some momentum and all. But then that penalty puts us back to like the 5 or 6 yard line. And we just don't have a team that first and 25 was ever going to probably go anywhere, especially from our own 5 or 6 yard line.
And if I'm not mistaken, shortly after we had to give the ball up on that play, I think it was the ensuing drive by Dallas that they had the catch that wasn't a catch.
Correct.
That they didn't review. It was actually a drop. It was a long pass that they had right after that. And those two things really changed the complexion of the game.
That block in the back, it was so bad to happen in the tackle box that I assumed that there was, because it's never called, I assumed that there was a rule that says you said you could do it. I had to go look it up because I've been playing inside the tackle box for, I don't know, 17 years, and I've never seen that happen at any level of football, pro, college, my freaking games, never seen that called. I had to go look it up and be like, are you sure that's even a rule you can call? Because it's like, it just didn't make any sense. You don't ever see that called. It didn't happen. Even if it was a block in the back, you wouldn't see that called. And not only did it not happen, but it was called. It was just baffling. And in the moment I was just mad because it was just another missed call against the Saints, because we get those because we're Saints fans. But looking back on it, I just get more mad as I go. As we list all the layers of how horrible that job was, and then to admit it behind closed doors, oh yeah, we missed another one against the same team again. My bad.
To me, Heath makes the best point when he simply says, "I don't know how you can look at this and then okay, you threw the flag and you were like, oh my God, what was I thinking? I mean, obviously, guys, come here, huddle up. Yeah, look, I just threw this flag. I guess I was just thinking blind side, but it was just I keep saying a running back. I know it's not a running back, but basically they just picked up the blitz and I threw the flag. And they're like, yeah, just go ahead and keep it. I just don't know how any of them said, man, you're going to look like a fool if you continue on with this call. Okay, so I'm going to open up a can of worms that I generally, not just generally, I don't like, I don't agree with. Maybe I can't say that anymore, but there has been discussion. This has gone so far beyond fans of a team complaining about getting bad calls, because there are bad calls in every game. But there are stats out there now. I'll start with Wesley. There's stats out now that show that the Saints their opponents don't get called for penalties. They're at the bottom of the league for the last 3 years, if I remember what I read correctly. In penalties called against the teams that play against the Saints. And the Saints, it's just mind-blowing how the argument can be made. This is no longer just Saints fans being bitter and thinking they're the only teams that get bad calls. It looks like it's a legitimate argument.
Yeah, I mean, it's been years now that we are – our opponents are the least penalized people, teams in the game, and we are the most. And like we do all these research on, or there's officiating crews that call more penalties and all that. Well, our opponents have the same officiating crews that we do.
Right.
I mean, you can't rely on that at all. And it's, I don't know if it makes it worse or makes it better, but like this past one, the entire national media and people that are not Saints fans and don't care about the Saints was like everybody calling out as being one of the worst penalties they've ever seen. And I don't know. I think I say this, we have this conversation a couple times a year, and I always say, I'm not one of those people that thinks there's a conspiracy. I do not believe that Roger Goodell calls a referee and says, hey, you know, I don't like them. Remember, just to remind you, I can't get there.
Right.
But I also feel like I have to a couple times a year defend that, saying, hey, let's slow down. But it keeps happening. It's exhausting and strange. And I don't know. I mean, I don't know. And I watch these other games and I see lots of bad penalties, but you can look at the stats and ours are the worst.
Right. Heath. Okay. So it's one thing where you get bad calls, every team gets them. But when you go 3 years and the opposing team, and the thing about it is it would maybe be different if the Saints were bad teams. Now this year, obviously different from the last two, But the Saints were good teams. You know, when I say good teams, meaning those years in 18 and 19, or if it's 19 and 20,
yeah,
they're not highly undisciplined teams, but yet they still end up in the bottom of the league. The Saints don't necessarily get more penalties than is average, but the teams they play against get no penalties called against them. And that's a little bit of an exaggeration, but on average enough to make the Saints the lowest team where their opponents are penalized. I don't know if I'm even verbalizing that properly, but I think you know what I mean.
Yeah, no, I mean, I believe it's virtually statistically impossible, right? Like, I don't think you can possibly have this situation where it keeps coming up year after year. And like you said, the important number is not even so much how many penalties the Saints are committing. It's the fact that penalties don't get called on the other team when they're playing us, right? That's a whole different thing. That's something that's really not a matter of whether the Saints are a good team or a bad team, or even how they play, if they're a dirty team or, you know, we all remember Seattle, right? The Legion of Boom. They were infamous for because they didn't get called a lot of them, but their defensive backfield held and mauled people consistently, you know, constantly. I understand the whole thing about I don't really want to be a conspiracy theorist. Here's what I'll say, though. Things can happen subconsciously, right? In other words, it may not be a conspiracy where he's sitting there telling people, you know, make these calls or don't make these calls. I want to see the Saints at the bottom of the penalty ratio. But these things have a way of subconsciously taking on a life of their own. I don't really know how else to explain it. I really don't. Like I said, just on its own, mathematically, statistically, it seems to be impossible.
Craig, recently Sean Payton resigned from the competition committee. Now, I don't believe that in itself has anything to do because obviously this isn't something that just happened this week. Although if you want to be a real conspiracy theorist, you might say this is your parting gift, but do you think that maybe Sean Payton's reputation, where there are things that he does and says, it's fans say, "Yeah, I like that our coach did that and said that," and you give him a piece of your mind, but this is why teams keep quiet, because they know that there can be some retaliation, even if it's just the referees. I don't like these guys, and so maybe I keep my pocket in my or my flag in my pocket a little bit more against the other team.
You know, it's one of those things where the hardest things to say are "I'm sorry" or "I'm proud of you" or "my conspiracy theorist friend was right," because it's just getting worse. It's just every week it seems they dump a little bit of gas on the "good devil is out to get us" fire. You know, you talk about how you got guys like Aaron Rodgers who are deceiving the league about their COVID vaccination status, whether you believe in that or not, it's a completely different matter. Deceiving the league, has no punishment come to them, but not wearing a mask and dancing in the locker room costs you draft picks.
Right.
Just everything being even, the Saints are penalized more harshly for the same infractions. They're penalized as much as they possibly can be, and their opponents are given a free pass. The last 3 years, they were the most penalized. Their opponents were the least penalized, third least penalized, and then least penalized again in last year. And this year, I haven't seen the numbers, but I can't imagine that there's any team that is getting shafted as badly by the referees as us, because we're seeing it. You have data, and then you have the games. You know, and you want to everyone wants to have a stat nerd breakdown of, well, this percentage of plays actually shook out like this. We're watching the games. We know when there's a third down that we convert on third and long and it gets wiped out because of the worst penalty you've ever seen in your life. And we've seen all this stuff. It's exhausting.
It really is.
It goes all the way back to the Bounty Gate stuff too, which when all that came out, multiple retired Hall of Famers, a few people that were still in the league, came out and said that happens in every single locker room in the NFL. That exact same conversation that became such a big deal, they flat out said, "We've done that for years. That is a thing. That is not trying to injure people. That is good tackles, good hits. It happens in every single locker room.
We did it in high school."
Nobody went researching any of that to find out like if it really was going on. And then one thing is similar stat that we're saying, I want to make sure these things are sound similar but are different. Not only are we the most penalized, or our opponents are the least penalized over the last 3 years, but they're also the least penalized each of the last 3 years. So just there wasn't like one year where it was a whole bunch. And each of the last 3 years, our opponents are the least penalized. It's not just
a coincidence. This kind of reminds me of when the Saints had really bad defenses, but Drew Brees was amazing, and Drew Brees would end up with like a 113 quarterback rating, but whatever bum quarterback we played against had the same type of rating. And it's just that basically every team you play has a Hall of Fame quarterback because our pass defense was so bad. And this kind of reminds me of that, because it's simply, well, listen, what's a great equalizer is, okay, we won't necessarily, because the stats don't prove out that the Saints commit more penalties. The Saints are actually a pretty disciplined team. But how do you make every game a little bit more equal? Well, you just don't call penalties on the other team. You don't call holdings. You don't call that, you know, defensive pass interference. So, listen, I would challenge anyone to go back. Tomas he would talk about it. He would talk about the penalties and the holdings that didn't get called. And I tend to just stay away from that stuff. You know, everybody complains about penalties. This is the first time I've ever brought it up as something that's actually a thing, and that I don't think I can just blow it off anymore and say that there's nothing to it. And again, if it would be the Saints offensively or would get penalized more, but they don't. So they're not an undisciplined team. It's just every time they play another team, they become the most disciplined team in the league that week. So, all right, let's move on a little bit. And I'm going to start off with Craig, because he kind of brought this up earlier. The season, listen, I know there are some people who are still optimistic, but for the Saints to be able to, Craig raises his hand, and that's why I'm going to you, big man. The Saints, in order to get into the playoffs, not only would they just have to have a complete change of fortune or get a bunch of injured guys all back and playing at their peak performance to make a playoff push, we'd have to pretty much go undefeated the rest of the way, which includes beating Tampa Bay. So the talk, yeah, it's been done. Not with a team as beat up as this, but
Trevor Siemian was quarterback in that game.
Let's talk about Book playing. I've heard people like, I think what they just want to see is just something different. Just give me something new.
I'll tell you, throwing four interceptions this last game, really, it's gonna magnify everyone calling for seeing Book and seeing the new guy. But I mean, you got to think of it as an investment. You know, he's a rookie. He's never taken a pro snap outside of preseason. I mean, if you're not going to get it done this year, and, you know, we're not eliminated yet, we can still win some games and see what happens, you know, and I will cling to that until Heath pries it from my cold, dead hands. But we're playing football, and until there is no hope, you don't even entertain that. But I would say don't do it anyway. I mean, outside of, you know, baseball players and kickers, you got to think that the quarterback is such a delicate psyche. I mean, you've got all pros like Andrew Luck that are like, no, I'm going to go do what anything else, because this is stressful and I don't like losing. You don't want to put a guy out there, let him get beat up behind, I'm assuming Armstead will come back and then get hurt again by the time Book comes out, and Pete's not going to be there, and don't let him get beat up. He's going to lose a couple of games. Why damage kid's psyche when he might be a valuable piece 2-3 years down the road? When you don't have to, he's not going to do anything. It's not going to gain. Oh, you want to see him play? They see him in practice. They see him in preseason next year. They don't see him in training camp. You're not going to learn anything new about Book playing 2-3 games at the end of this year that you don't already know. I don't think there's any benefit at throwing this kid to the wolves just because you don't like Taysom throwing picks or Siemian getting sacked.
Heath, I bring you in. What is your thoughts on it? Do you bring the kid in just to see what he has and take those risks? I can't help but question whether or not is he that good anyway. Is he going to come in and, you know, does he have a chance to turn it around?
No. I say you don't play him, and I don't think he – you know, it's not like you got a Patrick Mahomes sitting on a bench and you decide, you know, do we throw him into the fire real quick? But at the same time, he could wind up – you know, he could be an MVP-caliber player or whatever. Book, by a lot of accounts, should have been drafted much later than the Saints did, or not even drafted at all by most people's accounts. So, look, that's not to take away from the guy, right? He may turn out to be a really good player. But what I'm saying is, where he is right now, I don't see any good to bringing him in, because you're going to, with some of the quarterback. Which David Carr, was he the first Carr? You remember, guys that had just been like shell shocked to the point where
the Texan, right? Yeah.
Yeah, you know. It was like they got to the point where as soon as the ball was snapped, the happy feet started because they had like post-traumatic stress syndrome or whatever, you know. And so it's like there's no point in putting him in there. And, I know, Craig, I know you want to hold on, dude. You know what? I love that about you. But even if the Saints were to make the playoffs, they're not gonna do anything, right? There's no way this team is going anywhere this year. I hate to say it because it's been a long time, man. It's been a long time. Thank you, Drew Brees. It's been a long time, but I'm all the way reverted back to the point now where I just soon lose them and try to get a damn better draft pick or something. That's where I'm at now. Honestly, that's where I'm at.
Wesley, I texted in our group or messaged in our group, and I said something, and I asked you to clarify, and you never did, because I didn't know if you were talking about Drew Brees having special accuracy or if Book had special accuracy. But I feel like you were saying that Book was a better player than we were giving him credit for. Give us your thoughts on Book.
No, I was definitely talking about Brees.
Oh, okay.
I don't know what we have with Book. I don't want to act like I know anything. I think he should play. The rest of the, he's no matter what, he's on a rookie deal that he's going to, however he does this year, unless he gets injured, is not going to hurt how the competition is going to be next year. If anything, it helps him as he goes in the preseason to see what he's got. I don't know if we would find out. I don't think we can, if he has a bad couple of games to end this year, I don't think that we can say, well, that means he's a wash and he's a bad player and don't give him a chance. Because everybody's been struggling. But the experience that he would get, I think our offensive line is good enough to not get him hurt and beat up. Like the Texans offensive line that Craig was referring to is just, or Heath was, is just amazingly terrible. And they were trying to get their quarterback killed back then. I think you play him. You see what you've got. See what kind of experience he can get. And then we've got to make decisions really quickly about our quarterback. I mean, over this offseason, if we're not trading for somebody, we're either bringing in somebody who's had a massive knee injury and whatever this Taysom Hill weird contract is. I mean, we've got to figure out probably with both of them, like what they actually bring to the table.
I'm in the group of, I just don't know what Book would bring to the team. I don't know how he would help the team. And I think it was, I don't know, both of Craig and Heath pointed out that, I mean, yeah, you know, you want to see what you have. And I know that's what the fans want. They're like, yeah, let's see what, but I agreed. I mean, you're going to just wreck the kid's confidence. What do you gain? I personally, obviously I'm tongue in cheek here, but Book should be like, I'm not going to play with those guys. I mean, I'll destroy my status, my contract opportunities. I think I mentioned this in a group jokingly. If the fans decided what your contract was going to be and whether you would be on the team, I don't know, if I was Jameis Winston, I'd say, man, I'm not playing with these guys. For sure, if I was Trevor Siemian, I'd be like, you seriously expect me to go out there and play with this group of guys? So I'd have no idea what someone would want to do putting a rookie in there who doesn't really understand the game yet, at least not to make the quick decisions necessary. We would have to do blindside blocks on everybody just to keep him upright, right?
Well, I mean, in defense of Book, I mean, he played in the pro system with new LSU coach, right, Brian Kelly. I mean, he has experience, started a lot of games, he's won a lot of games. To Heath's point, I mean, I don't think it ruins his career to let him get hit a couple times. I just don't know what the benefit is.
Just with the roster spots, don't we need to know what he's worth going next year? We can't carry three or four quarterbacks forever. At some point, Taysom Hill either has to be a backup quarterback or a starting quarterback, or he's the other guy who's not in the quarterback room. And so we've already seen that this year. Once somebody got injured, we're like, well, what do we do? Like Taysom Hill now doesn't have this role, and now let's get him to lose some weight again so he can be a quarterback. And we've got to figure out that, but we can't have whoever the starter is going to be and Taysom and Ian and Ian Book and then have them all active on game day, hoping that.
Okay. Based on what we've seen from our quarterback play with this injured offense, I would expect him as a rookie not to play very well. And then what are you really finding out about him that, okay, he gets in there and he can take a hit. And yeah, maybe he made a couple of quick reads to get the ball out. I just don't know. You know, listen, like I say to you guys all the time, I have my thoughts, but you know, hey, if they put him in there, I'd be like, let's check him out and see what he has. But Heath, you had something to put on it?
To me, with the contract that you just gave Taysom Hill, it's more important to try to figure out what you actually have in him going forward, assuming he can play. Now, I know his finger got hurt and everything, and so that may change things, but I think they need to know more about what he really is or isn't as far as a quarterback than finding out what book is or isn't right now.
So you brought up Taysom Hill. Listen, we've seen a lot of bad football since pretty much since Winston went down. And
some when he was still here.
And we saw some bad football when he was here. But as a collective, as an entire team, generally speaking, it was pretty good football that we could at least hope to improve on. We've seen this bad football. Then all of a sudden Taysom comes in, and I don't know if the football was that much better, but it was more fun to watch. Craig, what are your thoughts?
Well, first thought is it's apparently my job to defend Taysom Hill from all you animals. So the man threw four interceptions, one of which bounced off of Kenny Stills, former New Orleans Saint Kenny Stills, breaking news on this podcast right here.
Thank really?
Former New Orleans Saint Kenny Stills. One of the interceptions, he's getting hit. The other two are, it's garbage time and he's slinging it around and he doesn't see a defensive end there. Like, inexcusable, but, you know, we're out of it at that point. And not to say that he had a great game.
We lost the game by 10 and one of the interceptions was a pick six. So, no, we were not ever out of the game.
The pick six is hard to apologize. And it was defensive lineman and it was just it's hard to defend that one. But if he throws one interception that I can't defend, and the other three are at least have some kind of an argument for. No, look, he didn't play great. We know he didn't play great. He's not a natural thrower. He's a natural athlete. And like every little league baseball team, your best athlete played shortstop. So he ends up at quarterback because he's a great athlete. And he's just come up as, okay, well, you put your best athlete at shortstop, you play your best athlete at quarterback. He's obviously better at other things. When he first hurt his hand and they were worried he couldn't throw the ball anymore, and they just went to the QB runs, QB powers, QB this, where he's jumping over professional athletes and then breaking tackles of other professional athletes on the same. It's incredible what he can do, but what he can do doesn't necessarily translate to quarterback. And that's what's infuriating for Taysom Hill fans like me who want to defend him all the time, is that his best stuff isn't playing quarterback, but they're playing him at quarterback. So you're in this catch-22 situation where I want to defend him because I want him on the team, because I want to see him run that QB power that looks so good so often, but I don't want him throwing four interceptions to the damn Dallas Cowboys. It's a whole thing, man. It's tough to figure out what to do with him. As a quarterback, I don't think he should be the quarterback next year. But I also expect that you're going to have Book on the roster next year because he's got that rookie deal. He's going to be there regardless. So it's kind of like, does Taysom take up a quarterback spot or another spot? Because you're going to have Book regardless and you're going to figure out who your starter is. So it's kind of, if you have three quarterbacks, your second one's not really a quarterback because it's Taysom Hill. It's tough. And luckily we have a couple more weeks to figure it out, but it is a quandary.
Well, I sent out some statistics, and maybe when it's raining, it's pouring. And I don't know, man. Now I feel like everything we're talking about is negative. But I look back and if Taysom's not a quarterback, I look at his contract and ask myself, what else did it's not like he caught a bunch of balls last year. He didn't catch a bunch of balls this year before he started playing quarterback. He wasn't used a bunch as a running back. Like, at what point are the Saints going to use him and just make a decision and say, you know, and I get it. This year was a little bit different. Maybe last year they were still planning on him competing for the job. But at some point for him to be worth the money, the $10 million, assuming it's the lower contract, Wesley, I mean, don't they have to make a decision and say, look, you're going to help the team best by being a tight end. You're now our starting tight end and, you know, you're going to work there exclusively.
Yeah, and if I was reading into this, weird contract they did, I think that's the point of the contract, is saying you're going to be a really well-compensated athlete, halfback, tight end, whatever it is, but we don't want to screw you over in the case that two quarterbacks go down and we tell you, go back to playing quarterback. So by having you be a quarterback for $9 million a year, I think it's, to me, that's what it means, rather than, I think a lot of people tried to read into it of, well, that means there's going to be an open competition again next year and he might win it. And that's, I think we've seen that. I think we've been down that road. And if he's not able to win it against Jameis, who had been out and not playing and had all his issues, who's he going to beat for the job?
Right.
Like that was his chance. So I think that there's going to be a focus on that. And it sucks that we don't have a healthy quarterback on the roster or a decent quarterback on the roster, so he can be doing that right now, to where he's still having to play quarterback.
Well, the one thing, Heath, that I'm a little bit leery about is the fact that Taysom Hill. Okay, so you give him this contract in the event. So let's say next year he doesn't really spend a lot of time at quarterback. He's no new starting tight end. But two guys go down, they put him at quarterback, and let's say he gets enough snaps to kick in that contract. Now you have a bad quarterback, because it didn't say, hey, if you have a quarterback rating over this, or if you had this many touchdowns, it says if you get this many snaps at quarterback. Doesn't matter if they were good snaps or bad snaps. So yeah. Now I would almost be in a position to say, after what I've seen, and here's the problem. It's doggone it. The offensive line's destroyed. The wide receivers are terrible. At some point, man, I want to pick on Taysom and say, look, he played bad. But would he have played better if there were better people around him? So I'm still confused. But what I don't want to see is a bad quarterback getting paid a whole bunch of money because we wrote some kind of crazy contract to protect him.
Are you defending him more than I am? I feel like you're defending him more than I am.
I can't sit here like I did a couple of weeks ago and defend Trevor Siemian and say, look, man, the guy's a backup quarterback and he's doing the best he can, and he played pretty well in this situation, that situation, but look what's around him. Then turn around and bang all over Taysom Hill saying he's garbage because he's playing with the same people. So, Heath, you could try to make – I just did a Bobby Hebert question right there. So, so you figure out what question was in there and answer it.
You know, Wes just brought up a really good point that, you know, maybe that's all that contract was, right? Maybe the Saints were not saying he still has a possibility of actually winning our starting job. Maybe they were saying, look, he's going to go back to being a utility player. And if he has to wind up being a quarterback, however, you bring up a good point. That's going to be a lot of money for a guy that has to wind up being a quarterback if it goes that way. To pay him, you know, that would wind up paying him, what, 20-some-odd million dollars a year, or, you know, would be the average, if I remember right, to get to $90 million or whatever it was. When I can just about guarantee that his quarterback play will only be worth the $10 million he's getting on the low end of the contract.
I mean, that's a very good contract for a backup quarterback.
Okay, so here's the thing. Where we're getting now with NFL contracts, I guess we have to get to a point where you got to say, look, a guy that can do as many different things as he can do, and he can also fill in for your quarterback if you really need him to, and be better than like the wide receiver who's the third emergency quarterback for Denver or whatever, you know, maybe that's worth $10 million a year. Okay, fine. It's hard for me to, but I already know I'm behind the times when it comes to salaries in the NFL and everything. My concern has always been that $90 million part of it.
And right,
like,
right.
It's like, well, really? Like, I took that as the Saints kind of saying, yeah, you know, he could still wind up winning our quarterback position, especially since at this point, Jameis had already gone down, right? So now you think the Saints are looking at him like maybe this is the guy going forward or something, you know. But then when Wes just said that, I don't know what to think. I go back to what you said. I'm confused, really.
Craig, $10 million is a good contract. Matter of fact, I think Wesley, you pretty good at this. $7 million. That's a really well paid backup, isn't it?
$7 million would probably be, I believe, purposely the highest paid backup in the league.
Okay. So if Taysom just got the $10 million to be the backup quarterback, then wouldn't that be, I'm not trying to say I'm right or wrong. I'm really saying, I don't know what the hell this contract's about or what it means. And I was kind of directing this to Craig. Thanks for the help clarifying that, Wesley. Craig, I don't know what it means. I don't know if you know what it means, but if you have something to say about Taysom.
As the designated supporter on this podcast of the Latter-day Saints himself, it seems like it's my job to defend everything that he does or says or is said about him. I don't understand the contract. I felt like maybe there was, you know, you keep him in the building and you keep him happy. If you give him that hope of becoming the quarterback, like, hey, if you're still in it, if you want to be quarterback, look, this is what we'll pay you to do it. If he ends up your quarterback long term, then he's going to earn that money because you're not going to win that job from Sean Payton unless you're doing it right. And he's not doing it right now. There's no reason for that contract. That contract was obviously given to him before he threw four interceptions to the Dallas Cowboys. You know, it's clearly a bigger contract than any of us would have given him. It's a little confusing to folks like us who don't have Mickey Loomis sized brains. And I don't understand it. I want him to be worth that money. You know, I want him to turn a corner with a healthy offense. And if next year we're arguing about how crazy we were because it was obvious that Taysom Hill is a really good starting quarterback because he's got all these, he's got Michael Thomas and a new first round draft pick wide receiver and a healthy offensive line. And I don't know if that's going to happen, but I would like to be wrong and think he's worth the money.
Okay, Wesley, I'm gonna ask one more question about this. And what does it say to last week I brought up, do the Saints bring Jameis Winston back? Maybe the Saints saw Jameis Winston and said, hey, listen, you did better, but we didn't think it was good enough. But if they want to get him back, doesn't this just tell them Taysom just signed? Doesn't that tell Taysom what our quarterback's going to get paid if they're the starter?
Yeah, I think that I think it means Jameis is coming back purely because if you're going to reward the guy who lost the job to Jameis, why would you not also reward Jameis? I mean, who beat him in a all-out quarterback competition when they were both healthy and both had all offseason to contribute. And one thing on the contract, by the way, it's not snaps at quarterback. It is passes attempted. If he gets 224-plus passes, then he gets the $22.5 million.
So we could play a whole season in New England.
We cannot put him in. We cannot put him in with the check with me because he's going to check to the away from the run into the. He's in there audibling to passes on every single play.
He will never take a sack. Never.
The QB power is gone because he's going to check into a pass. Right.
The one difference between Jameis, though, and him is that's all Jameis does, right? There's the other part of Taysom that he does some other things, you know, And that's where you know, so how much of it is the quarterback part? How much of it is the part that he does the other things? That's all Taysom does. And look, I'll just say this. I have been watching a lot of stuff lately, and I don't care whether it's national guys or it's the more local guys. They all wind up at the same part of the conversation that I brought up last week. Every single one of them winds up saying they think the Saints are going to be in the Rodgers / Wilson / Watson sweepstakes somehow next year, despite how long the odds seem. Everybody comes to the same conclusion that I came to. They just don't see the Saints and Sean Payton sitting pat with it, what's been going on at quarterback.
Yeah, I can't help but agree with that. And here's the thing. I've been on the other side of the fence. How you going to pay them? How you going to pay? But when I start hearing people, I listened to, golly, it was the old GM of the Saints. Anyway, one of the ex-GMs of the Saints who was in Seattle, if anybody can come up with his name, Randy Mueller, say, hey, if they could come up with the money, but he didn't say it in a like a way, like, yeah, if they could come up with the money. He seems to believe that somehow or another Saints could get it done. And if they can get it done, I do look at this roster and say, man, but I did make a point to you guys that y'all disagree with me with. And that point is that when you draft well, it's not like you can't replace these guys. You know, it's like, I'm not saying the next person we draft, that's the next Cam Jordan, will play defensive end. He might play running back or he might play safety, but there's going to be a really good player that gets drafted because the Saints draft well and replace the players who are leaving. So this window, this theoretical window they're always talking about, if you're a good team, the window's always open. It's just sometimes a little more open than others. So the only thing that I really do agree with is I don't know if Sean Payton's going to draft a guy and start from scratch. Does he start from scratch? And I don't think that's the case. Okay, before we close the show out, we playing the Jets.
All those other guys have held Loomis's beer too many times.
Yeah, watch, I got this. We're playing the Jets next week, and all I heard was you can't lose the Jets. The arrogance that it's said with. And I can't help but say, man, if you haven't been watching this team, we can lose the Jets. Oh, by the way, did I mention – we lost our best wide receiver, who was already probably our third or fourth wide receiver at the beginning of the season. Harris gets his suspension. And we also, there's a small chance that Cam Jordan could come back because he's vaccinated from the COVID list, but he would have to have two negative tests and have no symptoms. And it's a pretty tall order to get done by Sunday. So it looks like we're going to be missing Cam Jordan and Harris. And so I'm going to go around the room. Who do I want to go with? I know Heath is the guy that, like, you know what? I'm consider all angles. Craig's going to say we can still win
by 20.
I'm not sure what Wesley will say, but he'll generally be positive. So I'm going to start with Wesley. Wesley, tell me what you think. The Saints, the Jets.
Yeah, the Deontay Harris missing the game is the only person that's been able to get over 50 yards a game for a while receiving. I think Kamara is going to come back and get the ball a whole bunch. Who cares if Cam Jordan's not? I mean, I love Cam Jordan. He's a nice guy, but like, what has he done this year? I mean, I'm pretty sure he has about the same amount of sacks as Peyton Turner. Right, Craig, who's winning that?
Hurtful. Hurtful.
I mean, the Jets are an awful team. They've lost to, I mean, they did end up beating the Texans, and they had a weird game where they beat the Bengals and the Titans earlier this year when the Titans were healthy. But they're a really bad team, and this is
And what are the Saints?
I mean,
yeah.
Not as bad.
Okay. Well, okay.
Yeah. I mean, I think that this is, defense alone, this is a team that should not be able to score on us. And the Jets, they have two wide receivers, Elijah Moore and Corey Davis. Corey Davis is missing the rest of the year. He just had a season ending surgery. So basically you put Lattimore on Elijah Moore, and the Jets really don't have much beyond that.
All right, Heath, let's hear your thoughts on it. What are they, like five? The Saints are actually 5.5 points. And they're on the road.
Five now. Yeah.
That's, you feel better on the road, though.
It's going to depend on who's going to wind up playing for the Saints this week, right? We got to see an updated injury report. And, you got Jordan and Harris going out. You know, do we have anybody coming back in? Hopefully. Hope to God we got quite a few of them coming back in. But, that's really what it's going to come down to. How injured are we? If we're as injured as we have been, and you add Jordan and Harris to the list now, we could easily go into New York and lose. Otherwise, the Jets are bad. They're bad for different reasons, right? The Jets are bad just because they're a bad team. The Saints are bad right now because they're significantly injured.
Absolutely.
So it's just going to depend on what Saints team actually travels to New York this week.
Okay, Craig, how many points will the Saints win by this week?
I had said 10 earlier.
Yeah,
but
it goes up every time we say something negative.
No, honestly, and if the Saints and the Jets are both healthy, this isn't even a conversation.
Right.
We're talking about, third string quarterbacks playing the fourth quarter. I'm operating under the assumption that the tackles, that's Armstead and Ramczyk, and Kamara are all back this week. They were questionable last week on, playing on Thursday. I got to think that means that they're a few more days. We don't see the injury report until tomorrow. I have to believe that means that they're going to play. And with the offense that we've had yet last week, I know that he threw a lot of picks, but you can't tell me that the offense didn't look more explosive. It didn't look more dangerous with Taysom Hill out there than it did with Trevor Siemian.
No, I agree.
It's more fun to watch. You at least feel like there's a chance we're going to go down the field and score. With Siemian out there until the fourth quarter started and they play in that soft zone, you never felt like we were a threat to go down the field and get some points.
I feel
that now.
You feel like Taysom might jump over somebody and score touchdowns.
You see, I'm from California. We all about feelings over there, right?
Right.
So I feel like there's a better chance of us scoring the ball when, probably a better chance of us throwing to the other team, but there's a better chance of us going down the field and scoring with Taysom Hill. And we're going to give him Kamara back. He's been gone for way too long. We're going to get our tackles back. I'm not saying that makes us an offensive juggernaut, but I think that it's enough to beat the Jets. The part that worries me. Yeah, that's true. But, they said that it's not going to require surgery, and I don't think they're going to let him go out there if he can't throw the football. I mean, he finished the game with it. Anyway, the bigger issue for me is our defense. We are out of defensive ends. We're out of them. We've got three first rounds not playing. Now with Jordan on the COVID list, we're going to have four first round picks in two spots, left and left, right defensive end. We're down to, we're talking about maybe Onyemata is going to play on the outside because he did it a little bit in preseason, a little bit last week. I think our pass rush is decimated. And, you know, even bad quarterbacks will chew you up. You brought this up, Dave, earlier in this podcast about when the opposing quarterbacks would cut us up every week and look like all-stars. And in that was the era where we had this terrible defense. We have the same pass rush rolling out there now as we did then. And we're going to have, if Matt Ryan goes to the Hall of Fame, it's because he played against those bad defenses for the Saints. Right. That's how he gets in. We're going to roll out there with that same pass rush. And it scares the hell out of me that we're going to, you know, the offense will look better and we'll score 26, 27 points. And we're going to lose 27-30 because our pass rush is non-existent. And you can't have, you know, Marshawn Lattimore is not playing a top flight receiver. So he's going to take this week off. And he's
Craig, I feel like you're not really on a podcast. You're just like laying back on a couch talking to your therapist. You know, I feel this way. And what
are
that,
all of though? You not laying down on a couch right now?
Is it just you?
Are we not supposed to be comfortable? I thought this was a safe space. Are we not in the trust tree right now?
Well, that is all the show that we have for you this week. So Heath Elson-Son, Wesley Coleman, Craig Wright. I'm Dave Romero, and you've been listening to the BS and Beer podcast. We will talk to you next week after Craig guarantees a win. I think that's what he was trying
Guaranteed.
To say. I guarantee a win.
Guaranteed. I will skip next week if we don't win.
Oh, Lord.
And anyway, the person who sits here is but the most conspicuous member of a superb team of journalists, writers, reporters, editors, producers, and none of that will change. Furthermore, I'm not going away. I'll be back.
And that's the way it is.
Oh, but I don't waste time to tune into our podcast. I love this podcast, oh, but I don't waste time.